SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website as well, stevebick.com. Blustery-ish, rainy morning, but the good news. You want the good news or the really good news? Your Eminence, I'd keep playing. I don't think the heavy stuff's coming down for a while. Literally not for a while. I think we're free and clear. I exchanged notes with Glenn Kozak for the Saratoga Turf Course, which, you know, not just the turf courses, virtually every farm and field in and around upstate New York needed some rain. And I think the next round is not going to come until late this afternoon, it looks like, from what I can tell. And not that I'm a meteorologist. You got to go to Matt Shearer for that, or for oh my gosh, I'm going to forget his name. Marshall Sterling. I think Marshall Sterling on Twitter. Marshall has updated everybody regularly. He is a meteorologist. As is Matt Shearer. Right now, everything's on the turf. They are holding the MTOs, and the races that are turf scheduled and feel like are going to get done, because, in fact, the last turf race is 4:45, the 8th today. So my forecast, I'm using Weather Underground, doesn't look like, you know, heavy-ish rain, real rain, until 7 o'clock and beyond tonight. So the two turf stakes, one over the hurdles, of course, the Kaiser gets things going, 12:50, and then race three, the Lubash. New York bred turfers, where the Maker Cross Border will be a very, very heavy favorite. Then there's also a New York bred allowance, turf sprinting, the fifth. There's state bred maidens, fillies and mares, going a mile and a 16th on the inner. And then that allowance I mentioned. So five of the 10 races today, grass, and looks like we're okay. So that's the good news. That's the very good news. And beyond that, I got an upbeat morning. There's a couple, certainly, as I mentioned yesterday, we were tracking and looking toward a visit from Brittany Trimble Russell, Mrs. Sheldon Russell. And of course, Brittany put together the Rosario Montañez GoFundMe, which is well over, it's over 30, I think it's probably past 32,000 to help Rosario. And I heard from Joe Rocco after the show yesterday, got a couple of updates as the afternoon was going, and he's breathing on his own. They took the breathing tube out, and so that's certainly positive. He's heavily sedated, and I'm sure they'll you know, as appropriate, decrease sedation and so forth. But we'll get an update at some point this morning from Brittany. She's out on yesterday. Every time we exchanged, it sounded like the alarm bells were going off at the barn. So, and we're also going to hear at some point another horsewoman that is out on her trainees, the wonderfully happy, you know, next act for Megan Fadlovich, and you got to be just tickled with what transpired here. And with her riding career. I mean, she's still getting on horses, but I don't think she's had any plans to ride in the afternoon. But after the accident that claimed her fiance and left her, you know, badly injured, 5 months later, she's up and around, and not just up and around. She's training, and she got her first two winners on Friday at Mountaineer. So we're looking forward to talking to Megan, and that's, you know, that's the upbeat part of the conversation. We've got the Wednesday discussions, as always, and Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Hour two, we'll get into Sid's thoughts on Authentic and, you know, what that grade one means for him. I'm also going to talk to Jay Bridman, and Jay, got Jay targeted for 8 o'clock his time, 11 o'clock our time. Wanted to get, you know, some of the weekend news and Derby watch information, including what we discussed yesterday in the last hour. If you were listening to the replay, you heard Bob Baffert. And I want Jay to, I want to get Jay's authentic view. And, you know, because we've had, let's see, what, at Andy yesterday, we had Rich Migliore on Monday, and you had Baffert yesterday, and Baffert's confident. He says authentic, you know, with some more polish and, you know, some of the things that they'll, adjustment they'll make. That he thinks he's okay going 10 furlongs. And I want to get Jay's view, because Jay was ambivalent going in and has been for a while. And it seemed to bear out those last, you know, 75 yards, 150 yards, whatever it was. So, and Jay has got, you know, more Derby Watch news yesterday on this topic. In fact, Derby Watch partner and Marty McGee spreading out the news that that Art Collector, you know what, 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks removed from the Bluegrass win, and Tommy Drury must like what he sees and must also want to, you know, take a little edge too off of Art Collector, because he's going to go in the Ellis Park Derby. He committed. So that gives that field an enhancement. So we'll talk to Jay today and get both of his takes. He was busy Sunday, Monday, coming out of the weekend, and with Uncle Chuck's workout on Monday and his Travers stamp of approval. So in addition, Jay's DRF colleague, Marcus Hirsch. Marcus will join us because tomorrow, after lots of acrimony and back and forth and so forth, Arlington Park, one of the authentic treasures of the industry and, you know, one of the premier, you know, racing venues in the world, not just in North America, but anywhere. Arlington Park kicks off tomorrow, and Marcus will lead us into the season. Tomorrow, a 8-race card, and we don't know what the future is long-term. They made, what, a 2-year deal, the Illinois Horsemen, and Arlington Management and CDI. We don't know what the future will hold past next year, but Arlington, and they also will start without attendance as well. So Marcus will join us. We also will hear from Seth. We'll get some opinions from Seth, who had a very good start to the Saratoga season, his first 4 days. And I saw where his analysis is out on Twitter too, and on that front too. Nick's analysis is up at the website, stevevick.com, and you've also got Tom Herman, who has joined us, and Tom was one of the bookmakers for many years at Far Hills, not just at Far Hills. He would make book at the various hunt meet venues that he would attend on the steeplechase circuit. And Tom has been writing up analysis at Derby Trail the last few years. And so I've got Tom's analysis of the Kaiser. That's up at the website as well. Tom's got a good opinion. So you're set for the Wednesday action at Saratoga. Jack Schwartz is going to join us. He'll be our first guest in about 10 minutes. And Jack did something pretty interesting. And actually, the more you think about it, maybe it's not that unusual. You know, getting hot and zeroing in and kind of just hitting races and bunches. And Jack got his NHC ticket punched on Saturday. Okay, nice. And there's a story that goes with that that's kind of fun. And it actually has a direct tie to his NHC qualification last year. Something very similar occurred. And because he had a play-in, because he'd gotten one of the $18 qualifiers into a Sunday final, he turns around on Sunday and he gets his second NHC seat on Sunday. Pretty crazy. And I talked to him last night. We had a really fun conversation, and a lot of people around Southern California Racing know Jack and his dad, who's 93 years old and still playing the races, and they know the Schwartz family. They've been around Southern California Racing for a long time, and Jack's had horses for years with Bob Hess. And now, right this second, they don't have an active runner. They just had one claimed away. Andrew Lerner. Queen bee to me, Andrew Lerner. Andrew trains and will train, you know, the next one that they claim or the next one that they start with. And it's kind of cool because Andrew grew up with Jack Schwartz's son. They played sports together, and then they reconnected, and Andrew's at the racetrack, and so they took him on as a trainer. And of course, you've heard from Andrew several times. Does a very good job. One of the up and comers on the West Coast. So Jack Schwartz is going to join us. It'll be fun. And by the way, did I give the final counts on Beat Mick week one? I'll start looking at the Saturday races and make a selection later this afternoon, and we'll get started in week two. But in week one, we had about 800 players. I think I did give the numbers. 800 players really both days, and that very close to what we did last year. And you had 69 people qualify with Aquaphobia on Saturday, and 85 landed on Speak to Me of Summer, and 15 of you already have joined the tour for the $4.99, which you can't beat that. So get ready for week two, and we actually didn't have a whole lot of advance notice getting started, but week two of the Beat Pick sequence, and you just get qualified. This year only one qualifier, okay, meaning one ticket punch. Last year it got a little convoluted, and with if you had three entries, so everybody gets one. But keep keep playing, because we've got cumulative prizes at horseplayers.com. for those of you to, you know, to get to earn your way into other qualifiers. And I'm also Pat Cummings asked me to do the. He's got the contest for the think tank, and each week this is a prop contest. So we're going to put together a dozen props. If you haven't played this, this is fun. And you know, Hammer won it last year. You'll recall. So I think it's week three of the prop contest. Okay, so there's just a top line. I got a lot of contest winners to go over as well this morning from the weekend. Everybody's been rubber stamped and have gotten the seal of approval. Let's talk about yesterday's racing, because quite a few good things happened, and we had that late in the show. I wanted to make sure everybody was aware of, you know, the Lone Star was back up, and the timing was good, because as Brandon Lee told you, and you got some opinions as well for this afternoon for Lone Star's four stakes, but they had that carryover themselves in their brand new pick five, and it paid very well. There was 170,000 plus added to the pool, and so about 3.5 times the carry, and a $1,600 return, and you had a favorite, you had two second choices, actually three second choices and a third choice. Unbelievable. 880, 820, 820, 580, and $10. Pay $1,600. It's, you know, between the low takeout and the carryover, you know, further negating the takeout, you get, you know, bonus return. And that was Lone Star. And of course, let me take why I don't want to, you know, I won't give you the paint your eggs. However, what a situation in that first race at Lone Star yesterday. And, you know, we zeroed in on the three first time starters that looked like they were going to offer value. And, you know, the other Asmussen, Party of 15, there was Rebel Posse, the Matt Hebert, you know, who's tearing it up. Rebel Posse, and Warlock Doc from Danny Pish. And all of them had pedigree, had win early, you know, pedigree positives. Well, he ended up with a contentious finish between, and there were the two favorites that, you know, were obvious, Spotted Bull and Veterans Holiday. Well, it was Spotted Bull and Warlock Doc, the Danny Pish, that hooked up. And you know, when they got to the wire, Spotted Bull, you know, looked like he had prevailed. And I didn't really, when it was live, I didn't really notice how far Spotted Bull had been essentially, you know, hurting and getting out. It was a good two paths. When they went to immediately, it didn't take them long. They went to that head on, and it was obvious. It was really obvious. However, it was also pretty subtle, because there wasn't, you know, real bumping going on, but there was distinct hurting. And Richard Aramia, you know, it wasn't like he was driving and doing it with, you know, with real intent, but Spotted Bull was undoubtedly getting out and carried Warlock Doc, who, you know, Danny Sorensen persevere. And to the credit of the Lone Star stewards, because this was subtle. And they took down Spotted Bull and placed him second and elevated Warlock Doc into a 42-60 win tote. And from there, everything just spilled out. And this was a bonanza. So I hope you did well. And Veterans Holiday, who was 2-1, Spotted Bull was 5-2, 20-1 on Warlock Doc. And Rebel Posse was almost, it was 11-2. And so he ended up with, you know, $97 exacta. You had the tri pay $260 for a buck, and the super pay $1,300 with Rebel Posse fourth. So this was really worth looking at, and I hope some of you, I know at least one person that I heard from that that said they got a little greedy and they went for a double instead of concentrating on the on the race as a standalone. A couple of the other things we talked about, that how about that Corey, the first time starter, got $5. That was okay. 3-2 on the Brad Cox firster. That came in the Indy third race. And then the rest of that sequence, here's another just wild return. Indiana, you had three favorites, 2-5, even money, and 6-5. They won the first leg, second leg, and fifth leg of the pick five. The two prices came in the sixth and the seventh. The sixth was off the turf, and Marvin Johnson's Wild About You was an MTO, and Gleishaw had Mr. Quality. They were MTOs, and the field ends up with six horses, and the two MTOs finish 1-2, and Johnson's winner was 17-1. 17-1. Almost 18-1. Incredible. Pays $3,740. And this was a horse that this was a long mile and a quarter. Originally it was going to be a mile and 3/8 on the turf. And it ends up a mile and a quarter on the dirt. This is a horse that was in that Trail's End at Oaklawn, kind of a specialist for long on the main track. $3,740. You also had to come up with Contreras in the seventh, $1,540 on Fiery Tail. So what did this pay? $2,600. The parlay was like $500 and change. It's crazy. Just every single day, these pick fives, I mean, if you're a price-sensitive shopper, as they say, you got to be looking at these on virtually a daily basis. And then you're going to find spots to bet within the sequences. So Canterbury and Indiana, 10% and 12%, 11-9. And also, I should mention, in the second of the quarter horse stakes, Stone Lake with Luz Martinez. Trainer Anthony Cunningham wins the Gordon Mobley Futurity yesterday. Was the even money favorite. So there's your report. I'll also mention a couple of things as we are going to get Jack in here. Let me send you his number. I didn't do that. That was my fault. And you can reach out to Jack Schwartz. Here we go. There you go. Beautiful. All right, Jack Schwartz. You're in business. That race that was supposed to run at Erie did not go. The horses did not get across the border, apparently, in a timely fashion. So we'll find out. I saw that note floating around on Twitter. So the mass spreads. So we'll see how they deal with that. And I got to mention at Parks yesterday, Lupe Preciado. I'll bring this up with Tony tomorrow. And Preciado with a natural pick three. He won the seventh, eighth, and ninth yesterday at Parks. And in fact, the eighth and ninth for owner Nick Camerano. Yeah, see, and the natural pick three paid $90. Lupe Preciado with a 3-2, a 5-1, and a 3-1. Yeah, I thought that was notable. A good it's just amazing what's happened with the early part of the week. It's hard not to be not to get engaged on the you know, the first half of the week. I'm as interested in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday now, and you know, as I ever remember looking at races. And you know, as we say, the money that you make on Monday and Tuesday, it spends just as well. It's worth just as much as the money you make on Saturday. Jack Schwartz is joining us from, I was going to say from California, but he's in Puerto Vallarta, and it seems like Jack can only win contests and qualify for NHC if he's traveling back to L.A. From Puerto Vallarta. And Jack qualified on Saturday, and that wasn't enough, so he came back and got a second NHC seat on Sunday. Jack, good morning, and congratulations.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well,
and you're right. I've been very, very fortunate traveling back and forth.
It's the craziest thing.
I couldn't change my picks.
Well, that's what's so crazy, because, you know, last year I alluded to this with saying you were going to come on and join us. You basically a similar storyline. You had to put picks in, and you were traveling back to L.A. And you talk about how these qualifications both came about.
Well, the first one, my son and I were traveling from Puerto Vallarta back to Los Angeles early January. And it was a live tournament, put in all my picks. As we sat down on the plane, just as we were to lose our internet, I had said to my son, we've lost the first seven races. We've got to win four out of the next five. And when the plane landed in Los Angeles, the first thing I did was to look to see where I ended up. And I was shocked to find that I made it. I came in third, but one of the fellows ahead of me had two entries, so I got in. So this Saturday morning, we left for Puerto Vallarta, and I said to my son, I said, what do you think the odds are of lightning striking twice? And so I bought my way in and put in our picks, got on the plane, had no clue what was going on. And when we got off the plane in Puerto Vallarta, I saw that I was in contention. And by the time we got to our condo, I was able to have a little say in the last few races and basically just keep us going. So I was quite lucky. And since I already had an entry for Sunday that I had qualified for, and I do like the live tournaments, my son and I sat here and put in some picks, and we got lucky again and won again.
Unbelievable. It's so great. And in fact, it was, you know, Holly and Michelle alerted, you know, me to the fact that you had swept the weekend, essentially. But you said to me, we talked last night, and you said you're a little ambivalent yourself about having, you know, the two cards to deal with, you know, having, you know, to try to deal with having two entries in NHC.
And that is true. When I played for the first time last year, I thought one was more than enough. And I had told my son, I don't really want two. And, of course, the next thing that happens is now I have two. Yes, I'm concerned because a lot of decision-making goes into this. And am I going to have the time? Even when I watched the live ones on TV, I'll occasionally miss a race because sometimes the races go on top of each other, and I'll miss a race and I'll feel really bad. So now with two cards, I may have my hands full. Plus, I really don't know what kind of strategy the players that are really, really good at this use when they have two cards. So I'm starting to think about what it is that I will do with them and see what happens.
Well, you also, it should be noted, the leaderboard, the NHC Tour leaderboard, hasn't incorporated the results yet from the weekend, and you were 70th going into the weekend, so you got to be ratcheted up, the ladder as well on the tour thing. So in addition to having the two seats, you may be motivated to also, go after some prize money tour-related.
And that is true. So now that I'm closer, I figure that I'll be in the top 25. And yes, so now I will definitely make a run at trying to get some of the money.
I love it. And you're a relative newcomer to the contest scene. I mean, you've been involved in the game, and we'll talk about your ownership and the family interests and even your professional career interests and ties to horse racing and so forth. But in terms of being interested in the contest scene, how did that come about? And how did you start, getting interested?
Well, I started July of last year, so I haven't been in about a year. I've known that the contests were out there. I figured that all of those people are just very, very sharp, and who knew what my chances might be against them. I have a lot of respect for them. I met quite a few of them at the tournament, and I can vouch for them being extremely good at what they do. But I decided to give it a try. And as I'm getting closer to retirement, I've had a little more time to do this. And so I started looking at it, and I got off to a good start, and I just kept on going.
And clearly, have gotten a great feel for it in short order. Talk about just being a fan of the game and being a player and, growing up and, the professional ties as well to the sport, because they're very interesting. And it's actually a little problematic that you have to occasionally, you and your father have had to, deal professionally from a medical standpoint with riders.
Yes. My father has loved the races forever. He's 93 years old right now and still working.
Unbelievable.
I want to retire and he's working, so who looks like a slacker?
I love it.
But anyway, I remember him taking me to the... We lived in Mexico City from the time I was 3 until I was 8. And so he would take me to the Hipódromo de las Carreras in Mexico City. He even rode a racehorse on the track one morning, and I watched him, and I thought, oh, my God, he's going to get himself killed. But he was a tremendous athlete, a great highlight player, a great bowler, great tennis player. All the good physical ability seemed to have skipped a generation. My dad was great, my son was great, and I was average. So I had to make up for it somehow by handicapping. Anyway, so he would take me to the track, and we had some great, great days. We sat in the turf club at Hollywood Park among all the stars, and that was a great deal of fun. And we had some really good days. Then we got into the horse ownership business, and there again, we had quite a few nice days and a few good horses along the way. The best one that I had was a horse named Meteor Storm, and he got me a grade one, and I was excited about that. But at the same time, I had never said no to a partnership until I said no to Little Red Feather, and they threw in Singletary, and I missed out on him. And he ended up winning a Breeders' Cup.
Yes, he did. So,
that wasn't exactly my best shining moment.
The Meteor Storm. Meteor Storm was a nice horse.
Yes, Meteor Storm got me a grade one, got me several grade twos, won the San Juan Capistrano, which is one of my favorite races in Santa Rita.
Sure.
And yeah, so that was a lot of fun. And then, believe it or not, I actually at some point started to, I'm an orthotist. I make braces for the body. And so I worked on developing some bracing and leg wraps for the horses. And that didn't go too well. But fortunately, when we took care of the jockeys, things went really well. And we've taken care of a lot of the big names. And one of my favorite stories was when my father took care of Bill Shoemaker. And it was the week that Bill Shoemaker got kicked off Cougar II by Mary Jones Bradley. And he told my dad, I will not lose on Kennedy Road. And sure enough, that day my dad put down what I think was one of his biggest bets of $200. They're coming down the stretch, and Kennedy Road hangs a nose on Cougar. And we were ecstatic. it was great fun. An ownership story that I can tell you that was also a lot of fun. The first time we were ever in a stakes race, it was with Bob Hess, and Corey Nakatani was the jockey. And Bob tells Corey the instructions of how he wants him to ride the race. And after he was done, my dad pulls him aside and says, Corey, don't listen to Bob. Take the horse to the front and don't look back. And sure enough, Corey goes to the front. We won by a length or two and never had a horse near us. And the horse we beat that day was Miesk. I believe it was Miesk. It was... It's been a great ride.
I also love that you told me that Andrew Lerner is been training for you, and that you guys had a family tie to Andrew, your son, and he played some baseball together.
Yes, they played travel ball together, and Andrew found out that we had horses and decided to buy 1% of a horse named Sonny Jones that we had at the time. And that got him interested, and then he went on to the University of Arizona State, and he decided to take a shot at training his own horses. But one day, we were at the track, we happened to see him, we had lunch together, and he said, look, I just dropped a claim in for a horse named Jill Madden. Would you guys want any part of it? So I told him, I'll take 25%. And my son said he would take 25%. And we started his stable. We were his first clients. And fortunately, Jill won, and he started getting more and more clients. And now, obviously, he's doing very, very well in spite of us.
Nah, it's really nice, and he's been on with us. I mentioned Queen Bee to you, that got him his first graded stake wins, and one of the bright up and coming young horsemen on the West Coast. And right now, though, you're without a charge, so you got to get involved at the claim box at Del Mar.
So exactly, that's what happened about a month ago. Our last horse, Awesome Drive, got claimed. She won the race, got claimed, and my grandson, who's 5 and loves the races, said, Grandpa, you got to get a new horse. We've got to call Andrew right now to make sure he gets us a new horse. So we're driving in the car, we call Andrew, and my grandson says, Andrew, you better find us a horse soon. He's 5 years old. He loves to sit with me on Saturdays and watch the races. And when Santa Anita was open, he used to come out with me on Saturdays, and we'd have lunch, bet the races. We have a really good system. He's learning quite a bit. He's learning about money. He's learning about numbers. And we have a system where he bets each race. And so during, watching TVG, they have 30, 40, 50 races, he bets them all. But the deal that we have is that whatever he wins, he has to share with his sisters. And he's nice. Really good about that.
Nice.
Yeah. And he's actually learned that if he loses, he has to pay up. So
that's good.
At the end of the day, at the end of the day, I give him the money anyway.
I can remember taking our friends Kelly and Martin. We took them to Monmouth, and their kids were young, and the daughter Teenie, she picked the horse. The horse wins, and it didn't pay a lot. But when Martin went to give her the money, he took out the $2 for the bet, and she didn't understand. Wait a minute! I'm supposed to get $8. No, you get net after. I got to take the $2. I put the $2 up. She didn't understand that. She was outraged.
I don't blame her.
I'm
outraged when they take 20% right off the top.
Exactly. That's exactly right. You know, I got to ask, because I can tell by the Spanish accent when you talk about the Hippodromo in Mexico City, and the fact that that your family is so tied and back and forth. Your father or grandfather maybe, did he come to South America before the U.S.?
Yes. So what happened was during the 30s and actually even a little before, my grandparents saw the writing on the wall in Europe, mm-hmm. and they left for the United States. My father from Russia, my mom from Hungary, and they ended up in Mexico because the United States would not accept them. And many, many countries did not accept them. But Mexico was really good about it, and they took them. And so they established roots. My father was 9 months old and graduated from the University of Mexico. And then from there he went. He got to go into the States, went into the Army, served, and then established a life for us in the United States.
Amazing.
And ironically, now I want to come back and live in Mexico.
Well, on that topic, because of recent developments, my father, Austrian by birth, and came in 1939, 10 days before the war started, and they had an uncle, his uncle Ike, who was in Brooklyn, and he was able to get them travel visas. But several other members of my father's family, they were all over Europe. My father's uncle Carl ended up in Brazil, and so I could tell with all the Central American tie that seemed like that was potentially your family story. That's amazing.
Yes, amazing. Exactly.
I've got the opportunity, and Tina, with my wife, because of what's gone on, Austria has extended citizenship offer to the children of emigres, and so we can apply for Austrian passports.
I got myself a Mexican citizenship based on my mother being born in Mexico City, and now I have dual citizenship, and it makes it good for me because I can own property in Mexico.
Nice.
And it turned out to be a big, big advantage.
Interesting. We're going to talk to you more about that because Tina and I have got a trip that was canceled. We were supposed to, and in fact, at some point, I've got to update everybody on this year's fundraiser. The last couple of years, I've emceed the Captain organization's fundraiser in Saratoga, and the situation, and I'm sure this is the case down at Del Mar too, things like the Eddie Gregson Foundation,
right,
all of these organizations are going to be hamstrung, and You know, we also at Saratoga, we've got the TRF, and we've got the Belmont Child Care Association, et cetera. And, you know, the opportunity to have the normal fundraising mechanisms. Well, to bring it over to you on your doorstep, we bought a trip. We bought a Mexican, vacation trip, during the auction, last year at the fundraiser, and but it got postponed. We were going to go end of June, once Tina got out of school, and Puerto Vallarta was one of the options. So I'm gonna go. Well, I'm gonna probe you. I haven't been to Mexico in forever. I've been to Baja and been to Cancun a few times, but it's been a while. So. I'm gonna utilize your expertise.
All right,
I love it. Well, and Jack, I'm not gonna probe you for your handicapping method. It says enough that you qualified back to back Saturday and Sunday, and looking forward to seeing you in Vegas and watching you on the leaderboard going forward in the tour.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate you having me on the show.
Well, and, you know, for the dedication to the game, too, I mean, for the family and you know, being an owner and, you know, passing it on to your son and grandson, I mean, that's what we need. I mean, it's such a – the game is a treasure in that way.
It is. It really is. It bonds families and – it certainly has bonded mine.
Jack Schwartz. And, Jack, I really will talk, definitely will talk to you separately, and continued success, and look forward to meeting down the line, most likely in Vegas.
Absolutely. Steve, thank you very much for having me.
Jack Schwartz, and back-to-back, Saturday and Sunday, qualifications, and two seats, and he's going to have to figure out how to manage the two tickets, and maybe his son can, because I'm sure his son's going to go with him to the Bally's, and maybe the son manages, you know, one of the tickets. Maybe that's the way. Well, who was it that we talked to? Oh my gosh, in Toronto, our friends in Toronto. Their son, old enough to go after his own seats. So we'll get some of the other weekend qualifiers in as well. And I'm just reaching. There was a big one on ExpressBet, and I want to get the exact number of qualifiers, because it was based on how many people played, and I can tell you that Robert Rossett won the contest. Randy Gallo second, Alexa Zepp third, John Farrar fourth, and Cheryl Kaufman fifth. And I'm going to guess that at least that many qualify, but I'll get the exact number and see how far down the leaderboard the that qualifier counted for.